Hey, this is Mar from Pods Like Us, the show where we help you to find your next podcast addiction. And you're listening to Trimming the Musical Fat, a show where Paul and Stephen tell you all you need to know about and more about the music that you love.
What's that smell?
Oh, that would be me. I've been swimming in raw sewage. I love it. I love it.
That's the signal. Let's go. Do it.
Hi, welcome to Trimming the Musical Fat. I'm Stephen Nicholson. Paul and I were delighted to recently catch up with Marv, the host of the excellent Pods Like Us podcast. In our conversation with Marv, we talked about his reasons for starting up Pods Like Us before switching the conversation to music and to one of Marv's big loves, which is Paul McCartney. And we had such a good time speaking to Marv that you'll find that in the coming weeks we'll also be releasing a bonus pod with some of the outtakes from that recording session. And I will apologise in advance for some of the poor audio quality contained in this particular episode. Okay, so Marv, you of course present the excellent Pods Like Us podcast. So perhaps you can tell our listeners what the podcast is all about.
Pods Like Us, I speak with podcasters or people who are behind the scenes of podcasts. And sometimes I talk with people who listen to podcasts as opposed to podcasters.
To get an idea of what's behind a podcast, that's what I get
from the people I talk to who make them. And then the people who listen to them, I try to find out what it is that they're listening for and their listening habits.
It's just opening people's minds to
going out there and searching out new shows and new ideas, basically.
No, it's great idea for a podcast and a really good listen. And how long's Pods Like Us been running for now, Marv?
I started recording the show in September of last year, of 2020. The COVID year, and then I started putting it out in
because by that time
I'd already got 11 shows in the can ready to go.
It's strange, I went from not being a
podcaster to space of 2 days recording 9 episodes.
That's impressive.
And then recorded another couple.
That's impressive.
I'm doing that again.
No, that's impressive. But I, as you know, it's good to have it's good to have them in the can and out there. If somebody does like one, then boom, immediately they've got quite a few others to go to as well. So if you could have anybody in the world to guest on your show, of course, other than Paul and I, who would that person be?
I don't know. Because I remember I was talking to, I'm going to name drop here. I was talking to Robbie from Out of the Blank. That was the first show that I made.
And we're both saying how,
in some ways, you know, celebrity podcasters,
mm-hmm.
that might be a bit of a thing, really. So much as I'd like to speak to people like, you know, David Tennant and all these other people, in a sense, getting those sort of celebs who do that, they've got a certain way about them where, because of the professionalism and, you know, they've got agents and that, they'll be a bit more guarded and specific about what they talk about. If you get a normal, podcaster like yourselves, chat that I think is more interesting than chat that's, you know, stuck to a specific
celebrities.
You will get they will be picky and they will choose how they respond and be a bit more guarded. Whereas I prefer
there is a sort of structure to the show.
I make, but I love tangents.
And we are discovering that already, Marv.
Thank you. We've been recording for nearly half an hour and not even discussed the subject at hand.
Well, we love going off on tangents as well, so you're in good company. So what's been your favourite episode to do on Pods Like Us, and what made it your favourite?
Beforehand, they've asked me a different question where they've said, what's the most difficult episode?
Oh, you could answer that one.
After making the show now
for so long, I've actually worked out that the difficulty about that actually makes it now one of my favourites to go back to. So my very first favourite,
because that was the first episode that I ever made.
The one with Out of the Blank. And he forced me into it because I was going to record it.
I sent him the bullet points.
And he just sent me a message back saying, I'm starting a Zoom chat now, let's do it.
So that was...
that was just throwing there and then. And then I'll go to another one where... Yeah. Because it forces you into it. It's sort of like, mm-hmm. You might say...
I will get to it.
But for somebody just to say, right, do it now.
Let's go,
pushes in, which is cool.
Yeah.
I was talking with Sean O'Connell from the show Real Blend. Uh-huh. And he is the managing editor of a company called Cinema Blend. And he makes... So Real Blend, the show that they make, is a film podcast. And, of course, he's more professional, shall we say, his job, get hold of. And so he very happily said yes, but I couldn't get the other two presenters. So
time of the recording, and he suddenly sent me a message
saying, I won't be ready on time. I'm in a meeting. We'll make it an hour later. And I said, okay.
Joe booked
then. so I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, I'll go off, get a drink, get ready, and, you know, an hour.
And then 15 minutes later, he says,
I suddenly got a message saying, I'm ready now. You've got me for 45 minutes.
Okay.
Because I like to have a nice period. So I always.
Like an hour and a half to 2 hours.
And then get an episode out of that.
Yeah.
So for him to suddenly say, you got 45 minutes and we'll do it now, then I'm thrown at the deep end. And this is during that run of the 9 shows that I did in the bunch of 9 that I did initially. So this is new to me. I've only been doing it for a day or two at this point.
Yeah.
So for a newbie, it's a bit of a thing to put them into. But so I used to say it was a different show because of that. But now it's a favourite because... And not, just like the one with Robbie, it forced me into a situation where I've had to learn quickly and how to just do it. And so it's an important one in a way. So, like I said, my mind's changed over the year or just over a year since, from it being a difficult episode to it being an important episode.
Excellent. And you won't believe me, Marv, but I went for a walk yesterday. And guess what episode I listened to? It was that one.
That's the one you listened to? Wow.
That was the one I listened to yesterday. Couldn't it make
did
that
my
up,
nerves
could
show.
You? No, not at all. Not at all. And no, he was a really good guest, wasn't he?
Because that was another difficulty. Yeah, he was. But it was difficult as well because he, as part of his job, he interviews people like Word and Martin Scorsese and all these top, you know, Spielberg and all these people. And I'm thinking,
Tarantino.
I'm a newbie and I'm talking to, yes, Tarantino. They've interviewed 3 times on their show. They've had him 5 hours.
Unbelievable.
I mean.
And I'm interviewing this chap and I'm thinking, you know.
I know. The sweat coming off your forehead. It's like, oh. I
had a bucket underneath me to catch it.
Yeah, good. No, well, it certainly you came across well, so you were fine. You got away with it.
Brilliant.
So,
I'm glad.
So,
what would you say your favourite McCartney album is and why? It's maybe a hard question.
A lot of people would go to Band on the Run, but I'm not going to go with Band on the Run.
Mm-hmm.
It's different according to what type of McCartney that I like. I thought that Tug of War was a cracking album in 1982.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, actually, actually. Rather than say my favourite, I'll say
an album that I think that is overlooked. I think the Electric Arguments mm-hmm. album that he did as part of the Fireman project. I think that's overlooked, and I think that's a cracking album that shows the inventiveness of Paul and his experimentation and mm-hmm. the openness that he's willing to just do anything.
Yeah. No, it's a really good album. And of course, he did a couple of the tracks live as well from the album on the tour after it. So
yeah, did Highway Live.
Yeah, is it a really good album? Yeah. Yeah, that's right, yeah. And Sing the Changes, I think. Yeah, but no, that's...
Changes as well, which I think is... I think
Sing the Changes is a perfect display of McCartney's incredible... innate, you know, because I think Bob Dylan actually said in an interview once, he said that nobody can write melodies that are just as perfect as McCartney's.
I remember the song as well. There was a video for it as well. He made for Sing the Changes. I remember buying it on iTunes back in 2008. When you got the album, I think you got the video with it. And Marv, what would you say?
I think so.
If you had to pick your least favourite, which one would you consign to the trash can? Notice I didn't say hate.
The one that I least like is, and I feel bad doing this because everybody throws this one under the bus, I think, or a lot of people do. I'm not particularly fond of Driving Rain as an album.
Mm, yeah.
I think it's overlong and also there's certain areas where he was having a problem with his voice at the time, apparently, mm-hmm. and it was causing him problems with his voice. And I just thought, how much of a problem would it have been for them just to have waited a bit longer for him to get his voice better, and then he would have had a perfect vocal? Like, mm-hmm. there's songs that are recorded later on where his voice is flawless, and you think, well, he could have just redone his vocals for those other songs then. Yeah. But it's almost a lazy album in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not going to say Press to Play because
it's an
incredible experimental album. Paul likes to experiment and take risks, even if they don't always work out to everybody's, you know, liking.
It'd be good if you could do a remix. Because there is good tracks on it, and there's good songs that, of course, didn't make it onto the album. But there's something about Absolutely. That production, yeah. And if you could, there is good songs in there. It's just to get the right sound for them.
Yeah, I've read about that album because
Press Play. That's right. Yeah, there was
because it's its anniversary. It's its anniversary this year, 35th anniversary, and it's got an interview in there with the producer Hugh Padgham. And
that's right. Yeah,
in the interview that. He didn't actually like any of the songs at all.
And my thought when reading that interview was, well, why on earth did you produce the album if you didn't like the material anyway?
Not at the time, wasn't he? He'd done Phil Collins and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, the big...
Yeah, because he did
the Phil Collins, Genesis. Mm-hmm. Of course, he created
Drum Effect.
You know, with the song Intruder by Peter Gabriel. As well, mm-hmm. and then he'd produced Synchronicity and Ghost in the Machine for the Police. Yeah.
Now, did I not read that he had said that he found working with Paul McCartney a challenge? Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was a nice way of putting it. I don't think he would be as polite as that.
I was being polite about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it was just egos. You know.
But when those challenges work,
mm-hmm.
Exactly. When those challenges sometimes challenges like that can work because I think
when he worked with Nigel Godrich on Chaos and Creation
in the Backyard, the sniping and the difficulties that they had in their relationship and Nigel going saying to him, look, no, work that up, mate, it's not there yet.
Yeah.
And this thing kept irritating the hell out of Paul. I think it actually caused Paul to create. To make the songs actually better. So it works, album's, it made the album much better.
Yeah.
I think that's a standout album for Paul as well, actually.
Yes, yeah, so do I. I think it's his best album of the 21st century. And I think that that little mini documentary that accompanied it when it came out is fantastic.
That was
fun. So if you ever get a chance to see that, to anybody listening, check it out. It's really, really good. But I think Nigel Godrich forced them into making a better product, if you like. And it's a great album.
So,
absolutely.
So McCartney's been re-releasing his solo albums as part of the archive collection for 11 years now, since 2010, which started with Band on the Run. And obviously it includes a lot of additional material on the archive collection. What album would you like to see released next? And you've maybe already answered this in the previous question, but maybe it's not.
I would definitely like Press to Play to be, a really good package for that to come out. But then again, I'd like
Wicked to be a really good reissue as well.
But going back to Press to Play, I think there's certain elements of it. We've mentioned the production that irritates most people. But there's certain things about that where I know there are alternative mix
to YouTube. You can find them,
which
are better in some cases. In some cases, they are better.
And then there are.
It's one of those albums you could quite easily make the B-sides as well. If you took songs out and put B-sides on, you could make a much better album. And
Freaked Him. I was chatting with Jerry Marotta,
the drummer. And he was saying to me that
it was just him,
Paul and Eric Stewart from 10cc, who put the original guides down. And Jerry was saying how they had a certain feel about them. Even songs like Pretty Little Head, he liked their initial guide to that. He thought that was perfect. And in a sense, I would love to hear those guides that Jerry was talking about, just to hear what their initial three instruments sounded like. Because in a sense,
Padgham made a mistake by
overproducing the album because he put too much there to cover up for what he thought were bad songs.
I think he's got the same thing
where I have the same problem with somebody like Phil Spector occasionally. I think his productions lose something in a way from the songs because there's too much going on. And to sometimes strip away a song and just get the bare bones is more interesting.
What was it? Obviously, Hugh Padman done the Press to Play album. He produced it. Now, was it that album or was it meant to be the follow-up, Flowers in the Dirt, that Phil Ramone was meant to produce?
It was that album.
So why did Phil Ramone end up dropping out? Because he's a great producer, obviously worked with the likes of Billy Joel. He's got a great track record.
Actually,
when Press to Play finished, about 2 or 3 months later, I've heard this in another Paul McCartney podcast, he started work with Phil Ramone on a follow-up to Press to Play. Because that's where you've got the session for, you've got the really cracking version of Beautiful Night with Billy Joel's backing band. And that is a fantastic recording. I like both recordings. I mean, I probably prefer the later one, but that one I think is still perfectly brilliant.
Could have been released at that point.
Because from those sessions, I think I had the original recording.
The song We Got Married that ended up on
Flowers on the Dirt. That was started in those sessions. And the Flowers in the Dirt version is actually just the same version, but with overdubs. The original version with Phil Ramone was. But
in Same Love, that song? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you, Mark. Yeah. There was.
On that. So he basically made an entire album with Phil Ramone that never saw the light of day.
So I'm hoping for that actually as an extra disc on the Press to Play archive reissue.
So what was the reason for it not happening then? Because that's a bit of a gap in my Paul McCartney knowledge.
It's difficult because, Paul was still, there were weird sessions. So he'd got those songs like that, but he was still in experimental mode as well from Press to Play. Mm. So you'd have some of the more experimental tunes as well. So technically you would have ended up with an album that was half of one and half of the other. Mm. And the
record company
didn't want more of, shall we say, Pretty Little Ed or Talk More Talk, which there were a few of in those sessions.
Mm-hmm.
So you got pieces like Squid and that he did, ended up on that album. The record company were just saying, no, we don't want more of that because it doesn't sell as much. I mean, it's crazy, really. You know,
yeah.
Some good stuff.
Company say that and you think to yourself, you know,
Press to Play still is than... It still sold hundreds of thousands of copies. It didn't quite get to a million or whatever, but you still think, you know, if you've sold 600,000 copies of an album in the UK, that's still bloody good.
He was at the bottom, really, of his commercial period, probably.
Yeah.
At that point, his stock had went so low after, you know, things like Broad Street and then Live Aid, but his microphone didn't work. So it's a shame, but yeah. It was kind of... That was that period.
Yeah. So I think that the only Phil Ramone recording that officially came out then was Once Upon a Long Ago, wasn't it?
Yep, and you've got the B-side as well, haven't you? The co-write with Elvis Costello.
Back on My Feet.
My Feet.
That's a good song.
That's a great song.
I like the material he wrote with Elvis.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, definitely.
I think the stuff he done with him, some of it was absolutely fantastic. What's the one on
those sessions as well?
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. And stuff.
What's the song on Off the Ground where it's the duet between them,
Mistress and Maid, or is it?
Yes. Yep.
You've
also got on that one The Lovers That Never Were. I prefer the version did with Elvis, the demo.
Yeah, the vocals. Yeah, the vocals are amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, Elvis's vocals are really scathing and incredible. It's got. Yeah, their voices work incredibly well, surprisingly. You wouldn't have thought of them singing together.
No.
And then some of those, and you think, wow, that really works.
Yeah, definitely.
They were a good foil for each other, and it's something you wish they perhaps would have taken forward even further. It would have been nice for them to do that. Because I think, did McCartney not co-write Veronica with...
Yep. And you've got Pads Put Claws, is it, as well, on that album?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Paul, as well.
That's right. I mean, so actually the quality of the stuff that they did do together is really high, so it's a shame they never really maintained that relationship, but hey-ho.
A
lot of material, actually, for such a short period of time together.
Because
you've got, so Paul had songs that he'd written with Elvis. He had them on Flowers in the Dirt and Off the Ground.
Mm-hmm.
And Elvis used songs on Spike, and I think the following two albums had songs that he'd co-written with Paul, I think.
Yeah. I must re-listen to Veronica. I've not heard that in years. I always thought that was a great song.
And I love Paul's bass on that.
Yes.
And the sound of Paul's Hofner bass on there.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's just a really good example of the styles of the two of them meshing really well. Really good song, really stood out.
And Paul's voice stems out in that as well, in Veronica, in the background. Mm.
Yeah.
And Marv, so we're talking about the McCartney 1-2-3 show, which is on obviously Disney Plus.
Yep.
Did you watch it? 1-2-3-2-1. And what did you think of it?
Fred Rogers.
3-2-1. Yeah.
Dusty Bin.
Dusty Bin. You've won a Dusty Bin.
Thanks.
Dear me. I thought it was okay. I thought I think I'd heard that they were for nearly 20 hours in total over a period of time.
Yeah.
For the amount of time that they recorded him and Rick Rubin speaking to each other, out of interest, I'd love Paul to make an album with Rick Rubin.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a missed opportunity right there.
Absolutely.
But I thought for the amount of time that they got, there's not actually much material there, and they could have actually gone into more. They could have made it longer. They could make a second.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But some of his memories as well that they've put across, you know, we're all the same. You know, when we get older, your memory's not quite the same as it was, and you don't remember things quite. So some of the things Paul comes out with, I almost wish that they had people there checking these facts.
Fact checked.
First, yeah. Doing a fact check and then saying, that's wrong. We'll not have that in the show with this bit where he's talking about another Wing song or something.
Because
and it's very heavy, that show, on the Beatles.
Yeah. Not much solo.
Very heavy on the Beatles. Not very much solo, which I might add, is a good thing about the new Paul McCartney lyrics book. It's half and half.
Good.
It's half Beatles and half the other 50 years of his career.
That's good, because he tends to play down his, you know, particularly in interviews, it's always the same stories. Hey Jude and John, the movement you need is on your shoulder. And it always seems to be the same stories. And and what was good in the 3-2-1 documentary was when he was talking about temporary secretary. That was quite good. He was talking about that.
I saw him doing that in Birmingham when I saw him in Birmingham.
Oh, cool.
Went to see him at Birmingham, and all of a sudden that synth thing started, you know, and I was just sat there and I was thinking, God, he's doing temporary secretary.
Yeah.
And I could not believe it. And then an official actually came up to me and he sort of tapped me on the shoulder and he says, can you stop videoing?
Really?
Because I was videoing it, I was going to post it up.
Yeah.
And they were sort of saying, don't post it up because it's like a surprise. And I sort of get what they meant. I wish I'd have kept the actual video now so I could keep looking back at it.
Yeah, we saw him in Glasgow in end of 2018, and he did he did that there as well. But so it's good when he does these cold cuts, if you like, that nobody, like the people that are, I suppose the majority of people that are going to see him in concert or are watching the programme, it is probably primarily for the Beatles stuff, but there's also a lot of fans that love his solo stuff, and I would find that more interesting because we've heard the Beatles stuff 100 times and over 100 times, you know.
Yeah, because I think when he did, they talked about Waterfalls as well, and that was great because it's one of those songs that's not really been given a lot of focus in that kind of environment before. So it was great to hear him talk about it, but also, again, pick apart the song as well and listen to the isolated tracks on it. And and I would have liked a little bit more of the maybe the less famous material. But yeah, as you say, Marv, they've got enough material there. Who knows? Maybe we will get a season two and we'll get maybe more obscure stuff. Fingers crossed.
I do know that Brian Ray, his guitarist/bass player, who does live thing for him, he was the one who suggested to Paul that they do Junior's Farm. I don't know whether it'll work or not, but I messaged Brian a couple of years ago and said to Brian about, this is where I'm going back to the Waterfalls, and I said to Brian, I said, an interesting one for Paul to do live would be Waterfalls. I said, you could do it almost as a laid-back thing where Paul's there on the electric piano, like in the song originally, but be backed up with, like, you could just imagine in an alternative version where Brian and Rusty doing, like, acoustic guitars. So to bring it back and make it into an acoustic laid-back number, and then you'd have, like, Wicks doing something on the keyboard as well, and then just, like, almost like shakers from Abe in the background as opposed to drum.
Yeah.
Laid-back into a... You know, almost that you can just see them all there together in a small group. It's like a lot of these groups do when they do like an acoustic bit,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. and being reworked that way, and I think it would work really well like that.
Or could he do "Oh Women, Oh Why"? Do that live. I mean, obviously his vocals, yes, he couldn't do that now, but yeah, maybe in the past, yeah, if he'd done that live. But yeah, be quite a you tough know, one on the vocals. Yeah.
He recreated that vocal though again, didn't he? Forgive Me Some Slack.
Oh yeah,
in a sense, yeah, same sort of voice. He's got the the "Oh Woman, Oh Why" voice in that "Cut Me Some Slack," the song that he did with the three. You know, he said that, you know, three ex members of Nirvana and whatever.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. When we seen him live in 2018, I think actually two of the things I remember. One, it was actually nice to hear a Christmas classic done by the artist in the flesh, which was Wonderful Christmas Time. So obviously it was just 2 weeks prior to Christmas. And I love how he introduced Let Me In. Yes, this is the song from the house. Was it the lottery?
Postcode lottery?
Postcode lottery. This is the postcode lottery song, you know?
Yeah.
And off they went into the lament. You know?
Oh, dear. Brilliant.
Yeah.
It was good.
And Marv, what do you think of the recent re-release of the Beatles' Let It Be album?
I think it's good. I've not actually been able to afford it yet. I think it's really good what's there. But, you know, I was saying, I'm self-advertising here. I've got an episode coming out soon where I've talked to Nick from the Winter of Discontent podcast, where he's going through the actual Nagra reels from those, the reel recordings from those sessions. And I was saying to Nick that no matter what they release from that, always find fans will say, do you know what? I'd have much preferred take 7 than take 8. Or I would have preferred this than that, you know. You're never going to please every single fan. And I'm not a fan of the E-disc, shall we say, you know, where they've just put 4 songs on a CD, and I'm thinking, you could have done much better than that, really. But I think they're going to milk it so that when the Get Back film from Peter Jackson comes out, I think that come the new year, there will be a soundtrack album for the for the Get Back documentary series.
Yeah.
And are you looking forward to seeing that? You've actually preempted the next question, actually. Are you looking forward to seeing that?
I'm looking more now that I've seen the recent trailer. Initially, I was a bit sceptical because I thought, you know, because a lot of people were talking about the possibility of whitewashing or making it seem like it was better than it was. You know, I've said to people before that, you know, as people that have been in bands, we know that in any band, you will have positive and negative, and you will fight, you know, tooth and nail in a group, your absolute pure joy, and you'll have absolute moments where you want to kill the person that's playing the guitar next to you. You know, so these things happen in bands. So now that I've seen this footage, it looks more like a real band would be, where they're arguing, then they're having fun, and then they're getting on each other's nerves. But that's life in a band. So I'm more interested because of the fact that you can see the negative and positive in the trailer.
Yeah, it's more realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I do call Keeping Up with the Beatles. Because it is much like a reality TV show. Oh, we've got this long to do this in. Oh, how many songs have we got? None. Oh, okay. Yeah. It's got those dramatic beats that you find in reality television.
I was just going to say the exact thing. That's what I liked about the trailer, that they have kind of turned the narrative into it being the Beatles hating each other and just aimlessly recording songs into some kind of a narrative where they were actually building towards something. There was a goal, and here's what the goal is, and we're going to see them building up towards it, which ultimately ends up being the rooftop gig at Apple. So I liked that. I thought that was very clever to construct the trailer, and I'm sure the documentary or movie, whatever we want to call it, in that style there. So I thought that was very clever to do that.
I do want to say something, though. I mean, I've wanted to say about this for a while, which is myth that a lot of people who aren't in the know believe. It isn't actually the end of the Beatles, because they did come back together again a few months later and make the Abbey Road album.
Exactly.
You know, that was actually the last album that they made was Abbey Road. Let It Be as It Became, or Get Back as It Is Now, or whatever. That was just some sessions that were recorded 6 weeks after they'd just finished the sessions for the White Album. You know,
crazy, isn't it?
You know, which is crazy. You know, 6 weeks after that, we needed to have another 14, 16 songs written. And you think, up to speed. And you think, nobody can do that. But
no.
So, you know, they weren't splitting up at this point. It was possibly the beginning of it, but they still carried on until September, even though officially it was the following year. They actually finished in, I think, September, when John said, that's it, I think it was. But so, yeah, they carried on again for January, February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, for another 8 months after that. And they made a cracking classic album in that time.
What many would consider their greatest album.
One of their greatest, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, love Abbey Road.
Yeah, and it is interesting, because, like, when they were making the film... Well, certainly the original film, and there's a bit when they're in Twickenham, and you can just see they look absolutely freezing, but also they're only human as well. And like you're saying, you know, a couple of months after the White Album, and they're in this place. There's no kind of atmosphere, and I think anybody would be a bit peed off, you know, in that situation.
Yeah, and being musicians, we don't want to be in a rehearsal at 9 o'clock in the morning.
No,
no, really. No. Because we've only gone to bed about 2 hours before then.
That's right. Paul, do you want to tell Marv what you did to Dad's lovely original copy of the Let It Be album? The plush original release. Yes, the book. And the little box it came in. Do you want to tell Marv what you did to it when you were young?
Well, that was another reason why I got him the Get Back book last week to make up for that. So it was way back in the 90s, and he actually had the Let It Be like box set, and it had a book and it had all the pictures. But of course, I wanted to put the pictures on my wall, so I ripped them out. Well, didn't rip them out, but cut them out. Yeah. And also to put on videos that I'd made, so to put them on the video case, which obviously is a silly thing when you look back. But hopefully they get back. But
I remember he wasn't overly happy when he came home from work that day, Paul.
No, I know.
And he still goes on about it to this day.
As we say in the UK, Paul's name was Mud.
My name is
Mud.
That's right. I know. It's funny because I'm thinking at the time, I just thought all that was the way every Let It Be album came. Didn't realize it was so special. I just thought, they must have all came like this. So going back to Pods Like Us, Marv, your podcast, where can our listeners hear and get in touch with you?
Yep. Find the show on any streaming platform that there is. So if you want to be in touch with us, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter. So if you go, I think on both of those, we're down as @PodsLikeUs. There's a Facebook page as well. If you search for Pods Like Us there, you'll find it. Contacted by... through podslikeus@gmail.com.
And obviously you got the name from, I'm assuming, from Spies Like Us.
Well done, that man. You've noticed, yes. My other half, Louise, who's in the other room, she actually came up with the title.
Oh, well, right. Well done, Louise. That's good.
Yes. Yeah, no, it is good.
Yeah, she designed the logo as well.
Oh, did she?
Yeah.
Very good. And so Spies Like Us, another McCartney song which just seems to have been forgotten.
Yeah.
Yes, and was it his last hit single?
In America, it was his last top 10.
Yeah.
America,
I think so. Good song. Like the guitars on it.
Yeah. Good video as well.
Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, yeah. Abbey Road,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which
got Paul... Prince Charles mask on.
Yes, yeah. He recreated, actually, the Abbey Road studio, didn't he, at his own house, I think.
Yeah.
Stephen, what are you looking forward to then from Paul McCartney? Then what are you hoping that he'll reissue and that you'll look forward to buying yourself?
Oh, I think of the albums which I have probably the greatest fondness for. We mentioned it earlier on, but Chaos and Creation in the Backyard is a personal favourite of mine. And we've not really heard anything from those sessions from memory out with what was released at the time. So I don't know if there was much material left over from those sessions or not, but I would like to hear a little bit more, because I know that McCartney was really forced, so like he's put a gun to his head, you will play all the instruments on this album. But I do know that was the case, so it'd be good to hear some of the demos, the isolated tracks, and so on. So I'd like to hear a little bit more from that. Going further back, I think that I know there's some of the archive collections or some albums that are still to be picked up on, and maybe something like, I think, Back to the Egg would be a good one to pick up on as well. I know there is so much material from that period of time that was recorded, which subsequently made its way onto solo McCartney albums. I know there was stuff that got onto Tug of War and Pipes of Peace, and it would be really good to hear, if you like, the Wings versions of those songs and how they were constructed as well. So, yeah, probably for me, Back to the Egg and Chaos and Creation in the Backyard. Love to get some extra stuff from them.
Yep, from the Chaos and Creation, you've got a couple of really good B-sides. Comfort of Love is a good song from those sessions.
Fine Line.
It was on Fine Line. And Jenny Wren, you've got I Want You to Fly as well. They were good songs.
Yeah,
I don't know if I've heard that one. Must track it down. Yeah, what a great album that was.
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. What about yourself, Paul?
I would say I'm a bit of a completist and I like things in chronological order. So for him to complete the archive collection, I would like London Town and Back to the Egg, just so that brings us up to, 84? So I would like those two, because I think there's so much material, just like what Stephen was saying with Back to the Egg and London Town and obviously the Last Flight concert, which was in Glasgow in December 79, and that was a really good gig. And so it'd be good to have that. And I suppose there's a lot of video footage as well from those two albums as well. And I think it'd be really interesting, and just the story as well, because obviously, Jimmy McCulloch and Joe English had left halfway through London Town. So it'd be interesting just to kind of hear how that all developed and changed with the new members coming in. And Back to the Egg. Yeah,
but there's a wealth of material from that era as well.
Oh, definitely.
That you can go into, like Waterspout and Cage and all sorts of things there as well. I mean, there again, you've got the experimentalism of the experimental side of Paul. In fact, with the London Town, you've got the last track, Morse Moose and the Grey Goose, which is, that's an experiment in itself between Paul and Denny Lane. That built from just them messing about, trying to experiment and come up with something different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Exactly. And I'm Carrying is an amazing song.
Oh, what a song. Brilliant song.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys know...
George Harrison's favourite song from Paul McCartney.
That's right, yeah.
Really? I was
solo
just going,
career, in fact.
I was just That's going right. to say, it sounds more like a George Harrison song, and I always wondered if McCartney had went out of his way to make it sound like it was a George Harrison song.
You can actually sing in that one, actually, with his voice. Yeah. It had suited his
Definitely.
Range, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, because actually it sounds more like a George Harrison song. Yeah. So that's interesting that he thought that was McCartney's best solo one.
Yeah, I read that, yeah.
And I'm forgetting something really obvious, actually, in archive collection. I would love Give My Regards to Broad Street.
Mm. So would I.
Yeah.
I would love that.
I'd love more video, the filming as well, actually, of the band mm-hmm. performances. You know, like any songs that band. Weren't used, for instance. Mm-hmm. You had some really good musicians there. Cause, mm-hmm. I mean, you've got,
oh, yeah.
Even in the Silly Love Songs section, you know, that a lot of people put down,
mm-hmm.
Steve Lukather from Toto, and you've got Jeff Porcaro on drums from Toto. You got Johnson on bass. I mean, you could tell it's Louis Johnson in bass, that bass solo. can't you really? I mean, yep, absolutely. And then his main band for the other bits, you've got Chris.
Dave Edmonds.
Dave Edmonds, Ringo, of course.
Is John Paul Jones in there?
John on bass, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. From Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Eric Stewart in one bit, he does the So Bad section
that's
in
right,
there.
That's right, yeah. The Shades, yeah.
The Shades, yeah. Inside, yeah. But well, there's a reason for that, isn't there? Because he had a motorbike accident, didn't he, Eric Stewart? And,
oh, right, I didn't realise that, right. Okay.
Yeah, he had a motorbike accident and he damaged his eye.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the process. So that's why he wears shades, is to cover that eye. That he
I didn't know that.
Right. Yeah,
I'd love to know if there was any additional material recorded for Broad Street, which hit the cutting room floor. So that would be interesting because that's a sentimental favourite of both Paul and I from back in the day. So. Yeah, I know it's got its detractors, but a big fan of that.
I saw it the day it came out.
Oh, did you?
Did you, right?
I did.
Yeah. But, how many people were there?
A few. Literally a few.
I know,
About 7 or 8, as far as I can remember.
I know, it was like come and gone in 1 week, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
But,
did see the trailer for it when I went to see the original Ghostbusters. So they had the Give My Regards to Broad Street trailer. So at least I can say I saw a bit of it in the cinema.
you brought another memory to mind there, where me and my two older brothers, on the same day, we saw all, because this is back in the day when cinemas weren't multiplexes. So, or not all of them were. So this went to have three screens and we watched the films that were on in all three screens.
Really?
We were given the money to go and, you know, basically get out of our mum's hair. And we went to go and watch all three films, and one of them was Ghostbusters.
Oh, cool.
Another one of them was Gremlins at the same time.
Classic.
And I can't remember for the life of me what the third film was, but we watched all three films that were out
Brilliant.
At the cinema that week, that day.
Brilliant.
Classics,
so there you go.
And I bet it only cost about £4 or something to see all three of them.
It probably did. I think the cinema, I think, was it 50 pence per ticket back then for us as kids?
Yeah,
something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And then we used to get we were irritated because I think popcorn was about 70 pence.
Oh, my word.
You.
70 pence.
No,
how dare you charge 80 pence?
Yeah.
Yeah. 8 for a hot dog. That's light robbery.
I think 80 pence now would just get you the cardboard the hot dog comes in.
Wouldn't even get you that, probably.
I know. And 70p for just, I think, maybe just a kernel of popcorn, never mind the box.
Yes.
I know. Back when the cinema used to be cheap. Long time ago now.
Before multiplexes, yeah. But it was more like a theatre style. They were good though. More atmosphere. Yeah, and character.
Then we're looking at that from rose-tinted spectacles, because then you forget things like how the seats, your knees would be hitting off the front of the seat in front of you, and you used to have the smoker, non-smoker section. You had that smell that comes with it. So you forget about the negative side of things. But yeah, it was nice. We had obviously proper curtains that opened and closed and such
intermissions.
But again, you look back at that rose-tinted specs, a lot of the time you were annoyed because you were really into a movie and you're like, oh, I don't need a break, just keep going. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks to Marv for joining us. And you can listen to Marv's podcast on all major podcast providers. And thanks to you for listening as well. And remember, we will have the bonus pod of our conversation with Marv coming out in the next couple of weeks. So how can you keep in touch with us? You can check out our website, which is www.trimmingthemusicalfat.com. You can subscribe to the podcast to get access to exclusive bonus pods. To do that, go to anchor.fm/TTMF/subscribe. You can email us at trimthemusicalfat@gmail.com. We are on Twitter with the Twitter handle musicaltrimming. You can also join our Facebook group and you can check out our YouTube channel. So until next time, keep on trimming.
I love it.